Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this June the 11th on the West Coast, now June the 12th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zones. Well, we'd like to welcome all those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world and on BlogTalkRadio.com, and boy, I got to tell you, I had an interesting day today. And for those of you who listened to A Marine's Disquisition with Drew Raines, he talks about Dickinson's Longhorn Ranch in Ohio and how good their beef is and their products. Man, let me tell you, if you get into that, you are in for a treat. It is awesome, and he has a beautiful piece of property in the southeast portion of the state, and beautiful animals, just absolutely gorgeous creatures. I had a very nice visit with him, and we talked about a lot of things going on in the world, especially things going on with food. And this man is on our side. We'll say he's on mankind's side and also the side of nature at the same time. I can tell you that we'll be having him on the show probably next month, and you're going to learn a lot of things about how foods are processed and what is out there. I had a very pleasant day, and hopefully over time I'm going to be able to make your day pleasant, especially when you try his products. Wow, they're just awesome. Well, that said, all the way there and all the way back, I listened to the radio and got to hear a lot about what's going on in the Gulf in terms of mainstream media's version of it. Seems now that they're starting to see things an inch or two more in our direction, the way we've been reporting it on this show for the past several weeks. This whole issue of how much oil is escaping. Of course, they keep calling it a spill. When you spill something, also, I want to point out that I've defined spills as something that goes from the top down. Okay? A spill tends to be attracted through the process of gravity to knock something on the ground or allow it to fall on the ground and splatter around. It's a difference between a geyser underwater or a fountain, if you want to call it that, a gusher, a blowout, or a volcano. In fact, it's spewing out more like it would if it was coming out of a volcano. Whereas we're talking about all this crude oil in the Gulf of New Mexico. There's been indication by mainstream radio that many scientists now are saying that the pressure is much higher than what's been reported. Of course, we reported that several weeks ago on the show, and almost every night, if not every night. And now they're inching up towards us. I've said it's five times worse than they're saying, and now they're at least admitting it's twice as bad as they initially said. So we're getting close. We're getting closer with the amounts, but nonetheless, we're not hearing the specific applications that would work to contain this thing and to keep it from spreading to the mainland from being applied or from happening, from occurring. It's as though this is an intentional destruction of our natural resources, of our ecology, of the food chain, the marine life, and really the world's waters. This oil has to go somewhere, folks, and that's what it's doing. It's going all over the place. We're going to talk about that for a few minutes with tonight's guest before moving on to some more positive topics. He is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, my co-host and honorary science advisor on Evident Footprints, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. Glad to be here with you.
Well, I'm glad to have you with me. I wish it was under better circumstances than what we seem to be going through right now. From your end, from a scientific view, what do you see happening here in the Gulf right now so far, as far as the information that you've been able to get your hands on?
Well, as you know, Don, information is really sketchy, and they're exerting as much effort as possible to prevent anybody from learning anything, which is not only strange behavior for somebody that's concerned, but it's also very inconvenient for people who are trying to learn about the problem. But I think it's becoming evident that the flow of oil into the Gulf is much larger by a factor of many magnitudes than what they are willing to admit. And there is no effort underway that I'm aware of to actually do anything about it. I mean, they keep saying they're doing something, but it seems to me it's all lip service. They're talking about this and that and the other thing, but they're not really doing anything. As a matter of fact, they had several vacuum ships, I'm told, that were actually anchored not that far away. And the purpose of those vessels is, in the event of a spill, to vacuum up the oil off the water to prevent it from reaching the mainland or being, you know, so dispersed that it can hurt the marine life. But they never even took the ships out of anchor. Instead, they sprayed it with that ridiculous dispersant, which made hundreds of thousands of gallons of the stuff sink to the bottom. And now it'll ruin the food chain for sure. There's no question about that. And the other thing is that sooner or later, that Gulf is going to fill up to the point where the Gulf Stream itself is going to start carrying that oil around the Florida Keys and up the eastern coast. And I don't know what the heck it's going to take to get people riled up until they maybe see the entire eastern seaboard turn black. But at any rate, it's going to happen. It's inevitable. And we can't look forward to anything positive coming out of this either. Every imaginable scenario, as far as the environment is concerned, as far as the ecology is concerned, even as far as the local economies are concerned, is all negative. The only ones who stand to gain from this are whoever initiated it. And, you know, it's no different than when Kennedy was assassinated. If you really want to know what's happening, follow the money trail.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I can tell you.
Yeah. Jim, I take no glee or pride in having determined that this is far worse than it is, and seeing that confirmed. But what that does is that shows our listening audience that if we use discernment, we can see what's really going on despite what they tell us. And so I make those statements I make in the spirit of having folks wake up and think outside the box. And as a scientist, I know that you can hear what they're reporting, and you can look at the scientific evidence and see that the two don't go hand in hand, do they? They tell two different stories. Would you agree to that?
I mean, of course I do, because it's one thing to have media spin, and it's another thing to have, you know, absolute facts. They serve two different purposes, don't they? I mean, one of them is a true reporting of what data suggests, which is obviously different from something that's got a political slant on it for a hidden agenda. I just to be honest with you, I form my own conclusions anymore. I don't even listen to the news because it's nothing but lies.
Yeah, well, you're agreeing with everyone else on that score. I'm hearing people on mainstream radio calling into talk shows saying that all they do is lie to us, which is a big change from the way it's been before, and even just a few months ago. People are really seeing now firsthand what's going on. You know, there's this issue, speaking about seeing what's going on firsthand, the people that have been trying to go down there to really see what's going on and report about it in the media have been arrested. You have an oil company that has the authority to arrest people in their own country. Wait a minute. This is a foreign oil company. Where do they get off running this country? And what spineless infiltrators, usurpers, do we have in government that allow that to occur? In other words, you've got one foreign company telling other illegal foreigners who are in our government, running our government, you know, they're obviously wielding a bigger stick. So, but they're all infiltrators. This is the thing. This is the irony of this whole thing. This is our country. And this is occurring in our country, it's going to affect our country very soon if it's not already. And I submit that it is, just on the basis of them having to bail out the fishermen. That's what they did. They bailed them out, and they told them, all right, go sit down and stay out of the way. So the people that are going there trying to find something out are also experiencing the same things. You know, it's pretty crazy. What's going on? It makes no sense. Other than there's another agenda than the one they're telling us.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. It makes perfect sense if you look at it from the standpoint of the type of world arrangement that we've been talking about for the last 2.5-3 years. It just doesn't make sense if you still believe the United States is a sovereign entity that's doing everything in its power to serve the people. That's when it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's as though this damage is intentional to force someone into a position where they just have to give up this company. They can't handle the damages. You know, they'll make a settlement. Okay, you take over our assets in the Gulf, and then you handle it. And it just furthers that agenda. Sort of like this is another GM sitting out there in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico. It's astounding what's going on, and I think people are starting to see it. I don't know how much of our show we should spend on that tonight, because I think we could be talking about more positive things. How about you?
Well, I mean, it's a very important issue, and there's no point in denying that. But on the other hand, it's like so many other issues that we've brought up, you know. Until people actually decide it's time to do something about it, all we can do is report it and hope for the best.
Yes. Well, you know, we have this dependency on oil, and you and I have talked about this to some extent on past shows, probably more than a dozen times over the past 3 years. And we've talked about alternative energy sources, and there seems to be this recurring theme. Not seems to be, I mean, there is. Let's just say it like it is. There is this recurring theme that we are dependent on oil. The whole economic system of the world has been set up to function in that manner. And all the things that are manufactured today, all the gadgets that people have, computers and cell phones and iPods and iPads and desktop accessories and the interiors of the cars and the toys that kids buy, on and on and on. Everything is in plastics. They've taken all the derivatives of the oil refining process and turned these things into income for the oil companies. Everything has become dependent upon the oil companies, and there have to be other ways to manufacture things using other materials. You know, hemp, one comes to mind is hemp. Henry Ford actually had built a hemp car at one point, if I'm not mistaken. The whole car was built from hemp. And certainly we could be using, you know, God's gifts for that purpose, but there are other alternative energy sources that are coming out. And as you so eloquently present that whole issue, the bottom line is the power production, isn't it? The energy is nothing if you're not using it, but the source from which it's derived is what has become this stranglehold on the world. And I wanted to get into some alternatives that are there that are cost-effective and more practical, less polluting, let's say self-serving, in that they regenerate, or we could use regenerative technologies. And I'm not necessarily using this term free energy, because energy is everywhere, and I mean, it's there. If you can figure out a way to collect it and put it to use, to some extent, there's going to be an expense involved in producing whatever device stores it and then releases it in another usable form. But, you know, where do you see this going? Because to me, it seems, and I guess I should make this statement just to close out this issue about oil, we're witnessing a sort of collapse of that system, and it's in its death throes, for lack of a better term.
Well, of course, that's a mouthful, to say the least. One thing I think we should address before we even get into the alternative possibilities is that it's important to clarify this notion that you mentioned of free energy. I mean, people have been taught that there's no such thing as free energy. And I really should try and make it clear that it doesn't make any difference whether there is or there isn't, because you can't do anything with energy. I mean, that's literally true. If you have 1,000 tons of coal sitting on your property, that represents energy. But until you burn it and create or release power when you do that, you're not going to be able to do any useful work in a given period of time. And that's what power is. It's the rate of change of energy with respect to time. And so I think that the real word that people are looking for is free power.
Yeah.
And forget this nonsense about free energy, because energy is always conserved, but that doesn't get you anywhere. It turns out, after 42 years of research, that I can show you situations where energy is conserved and work is not. And work is what you're after, not energy. Energy is just always going to be hanging around doing something. But work is what we want. As far as whether or not there's any free power is concerned, well, for all intents and purposes, a hydroelectric plant is free after you've finished building it. The same with these big wind towers that they put up. That's all free. The sun, you know, heats the earth, creates air currents, evaporates water, which turns into rain, which feeds the rivers and streams that eventually powers the dam. So no matter how you look at it, everything in any way, shape, or form comes from natural processes here on Earth, which are powered ultimately by the sun, at least in our neighborhood. And, you know, once you start to think in terms of like that, you realize that burning oil is really a very, very primitive approach to the problem. I mean, with the exception of the fact that oil can be, you know, refined and taken from the earth in large quantities, it's really no different than it was when a bunch of people were clothed in bearskins sitting around a campfire burning wood. It's a very primitive way of doing anything. Now, as far as, well, what can we look forward to is concerned, there's actually an awful lot of stuff. First of all, I believe, after my own work, that we've only just touched the surface on what we can expect to find coming from the area of electrical power. Tesla was trying his best to introduce even more advanced power systems, you know, which would have eclipsed his original discoveries and given the world a so-called source of free power. But, of course, the people that funded his original work, J.P. Morgan, for instance, didn't want something that was new and which would obsolete something that he had a heavy investment in, when they could easily see that they were going to make money hand over fist for the next 150 years. And they're still in that mode right now. The problem is, like everything else, when it's abused, you eventually get to a point where the system starts to fail simply because of the fact that you can't get any more out of it. And we're approaching that arrangement with the oil. We're approaching that arrangement with the power grid and the generating facilities which supply it. And so, thankfully, there are independent researchers who have been following their guts for years and say there's better things. It's just a question of getting to know where they are and how to make use of them. Now, in order to actually get to that point where you can see the forest for the trees, I'm here to tell you that you've got some unlearning to do. Because it's very difficult to go out and discover something new if you've got, let's say, 20 years of programming under your belt and a certificate to prove that you've passed muster. Because not only does that degree give you a position in the artificial world that allows you to earn a living, but unfortunately, it also represents a statement that says, I've been trained to think a certain way. And if you're looking for something that's outside the box and you're inside the box, you're never going to find it. And that's exactly the kind of nonsensical situation that we find ourselves in. I can't tell you how many times I've demonstrated systems that operate in a completely different fashion to PhDs and scientists of all sorts. And it doesn't matter that it's sitting there running in front of them with instruments to demonstrate that it's doing something totally off the wall. They'll just look at you and say, well, that's impossible, so it must be doing something else. I mean, it's like their brain shuts down when they're confronted with anything that's outside their programming. So how do we expect to have people who are steeped in a traditional education and taught that there's nothing else to go and find something else? Now, I can show you a lot of people, thankfully, that somehow survive and just use the information without shouldering the restrictions. My friend Dr. Fisher is one of them. He studied thermodynamics and the Rankine cycle and all these various heat engines and whatnot, and came to the conclusion, hey, things are missing. There's another way of doing this. And he came up with a totally new form of engine, which it can burn anything, literally. And the interesting thing about it is that the outcome of doing this is the exhaust is a combination of carbon dioxide, which, of course, is good for plants, and pure water. And in addition to that, you have an electrical or a mechanical output, which gives you the power you need. Tesla himself said years ago, it's not impossible to violate the restraints of the Carnot cycle if you really understand what it means. So you build a heat engine that doesn't conform to the Carnot cycle, it'll obviously behave differently. If you use the Carnot cycle to design an engine, it'll never operate outside that region. And so what Tesla did was he understood this stuff so well that he produced an engine which literally ran off the ambient heat in the environment. Now, we've been polluting the environment with excess heat since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. I forget what the mean increase in world temperature has been since that time, but let's say it's 2 or 3 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
That represents a lot of stored energy just sitting around in the material world and in the atmosphere simply because of the fact that we've warmed it up a little bit by burning billions of tons of coal, wood, gas, gasoline, diesel fuel, God only knows what else. And so doesn't it make sense that now that we've done that, we could theoretically harvest that heat that's just sitting around and resurrect Tesla's thermal system, whereby he made use of liquid air boilers, which were a couple hundred degrees cooler than the environment, so all his losses were negative, and heat actually flowed into these boilers, produced the pressure, which ran one of his high-frequency reciprocating engines, and produced electrical power. Now, when he first demonstrated this system, I forget the year, but it was in his laboratory in New York City, and when the word got around that he had accomplished this, the lab mysteriously burned to the ground. Now, you know, I find that a really, really hard thing to believe was just an accident because the timing is too good.
Yeah,
I mean, this happens all the time, as you know, Don.
Yeah, that happened, I think, when he was in Colorado Springs, actually, working on a project for the government, too. So it was highly suspicious.
Yeah, well, a lot of things that happened that man were highly suspicious, including his death.
Yeah.
But he was only one of many pioneers, and there are many, many technologies. Some of them are magnetic, some of them are gravitational, some of them are chemical. I personally know people that I went to school with, I won't mention any names, who came up with forms of fuel cells where the water and the hydrogen and oxygen were actually recycled, and the power output from the device was actually taken from the slow decay of the catalyst. So it was an entirely different concept, and it was like a battery that, you know, could put out power for 2 or 3 years. they have all of this radioactive stuff which they're burying in various mountains. There's that one out in Nevada someplace where they're going to put hundreds of tons of radioactive material and just let it sit in there so that it can destroy some future generation. So some of that stuff has a half-life of, you know, several hundred years. A lot of it is certainly 90 to 100 years. And the interesting thing about it is that there are direct energy converters which have been built in the past and have been known about for a long, long time and actually used in the Space Administration to power instruments on the moon and to power satellites and things of that nature. And essentially they run off of a chunk of radioactive material which is put in a special container and produces free electricity for as long as that thing is radioactive. I mean, there are so many different possibilities, and the public doesn't know about them, and they're not willing to release this type of technology. They always have an excuse, oh, it's too dangerous, it's too expensive, it's too this, it's too that. But then what do they stick under your nose? The same old oil burners and the same old gasoline engines and whatnot that they've been using forever and a day, simply because of the fact that that allows them to perpetuate the consumption of oil. So there are a lot of alternatives out there, Don. It's just a question of the fact that people have to become aware of them, and the same resources which were used to develop the oil industry have to now be applied to developing something that's benign to the planet and to the environment. If we don't do that, ultimately we'll be putting ourselves, you know, back in the Stone Age, because there's going to be an end to oil, and if nobody is ready with something better, then there's going to be mass chaos and degradation of society. It's a pretty well understood fact that progress in the cultural sense is directly proportional to how much energy is available for mankind's use. If you take one of those away, it directly affects the other. So we should bear that in mind.
Now, while you were talking, the thought of crystals came into my mind, and I recalled way back when I was probably about 5 years old, I had this crystal radio that was shaped like a rocket ship. And, of course, when you pulled the antenna, there was a little ball, plastic ball on the top. You pull on that, and the antenna came out. And it had two alligator clip leads on it. And you could attach that to a metal. And I found that if I wanted to sit and listen to music or listen to something on the radio in undisturbed way, I go into the garage, and the tracks for the garage doors were perfect antennas to hook that up to. And of course there's no battery in this. It's just a crystal radio, and I would attach that to the rails of the garage door track, and there it was. I had sound. I could tune it. You basically just turn it. There was a, you know, the rocket part could be turned, and that was the tuner. And here, there was no power source, no visible power source. It didn't need batteries. It didn't need to be hooked up to any electrical device. But in and of itself, the crystal was the electrical device, and the coil windings acted as the antenna and an amplifier to amplify the signal. And it had a little earplug also that hooked into it, was removed or detachable, you know, was a little mini plug, eighth of an inch, and it worked fine. Now, why aren't we using those types of technologies to operate things that generally use power. You know,
well,
let's
first of all, you have to understand how that thing really works.
Yeah.
Okay, that device is actually being driven by the energy that's in the radio waves that you're receiving. And
I understand that, but I'm saying
that's an important thing because Tesla tried to do that with electricity to give the world a free distribution system where he could use the charge in the ionosphere, which was literally supplied by the sun, and oscillate that with an AC component that was supplied by a hydro station somewhere. And then that would, in fact, put the entire electrical field of the Earth into a form of oscillation, which you could pick up anywhere just by hammering a stake into the ground and running a lead into the house. The people who were in charge of utilities at that time said, well, you're not going to do that to our business. We can't meter that. We can't, we don't know who's going to be using it. I mean, you could theoretically have a wigwam in the middle of the forest somewhere with a guy watching TV and running a baseboard heater, and you wouldn't even know he was there, but yet, the power would be delivered to him. So that was squashed as quickly as possible. But all these concepts, including crystals and including another fantastic project of Tesla's, was one which we talked about a couple of years ago in conjunction with the work that was done by Otis T. Carr. Mm-hmm. And that is that, for lack of a better description, we'll just call it a geometric amplifier, because it actually made use of some basic geometries and how you could build systems that would amplify torque and allow you to have a true power amplification simply by the way something was designed using geometries which are not normally considered. And that all came about because of Tesla's study of relativity, not Einsteinian relativity, but his own version of relativity, which he heard about initially from Boscovich, who was even more ancient than from a more ancient time than he was.
Mm-hmm.
So these ideas have been floating around in the human consciousness for a very, very long time. The problem is that every time a genius comes along who's clever enough to perceive another one of these natural mechanisms and attempts to put it to use for mankind, either he is completely interfered with, he's villainized, or if he's a little bit too pushy, he's murdered. So all this information just, goes unused. And I think the public is actually brought to the belief that oil, gas, and uranium, and coal, and things like that are the only way we have to go in terms of producing power for society. And it's absolutely untrue.
Well, of course. And then to boot, besides that, then to justify raising the prices, in other words, the obscene profits that are made when these modalities, for lack of a better term, first come out and begin to be used, they say, well, look, we've got the people paying 29 cents a gallon for gasoline. Let's bump it up to 33 cents and then to 59 cents and a dollar and $2. And the greed factor takes over. And yet these very same people are telling us nonstop that these are finite quantities of energy that are available. Now, that may be the case. They're still mining coal. They still have coal mine collapses. They still have people dying in coal mines. So despite the fact that they're telling us, well, coal is an obsolete power source, they're still mining coal. So and it's a totally different kind of power source than crude oil is. Yet they're saying the same thing about the crude oil. Now, how can we have these finite qualities and have the kind of disaster we're having in the Gulf of Mexico or in a coal mine or any other untold number of power sources or modalities that are being used? And the stuff that's mined or extracted from the earth to sell it to us, to market it to us, it's just a money game. If what they're saying is true, why hasn't anyone been able to stop and say, wait a minute, if we're out of this stuff, why does it keep appearing? Why do we keep using it? Why are we not pursuing valid ways to do this? They're going to try, is it just because they haven't figured out how they're going to meter it? You know, I think you understand what I'm getting at here.
I do too, but I think the answer is also pretty obvious. I'm certain that the people who are in charge of this oil empire, a planetary oil empire, which is really what it is, I am sure that they will keep things going just the way they are, unless somebody interferes with those plans, until the last conceivable drop of that disgusting liquid is removed from the earth. I'm sure of it, because their mentality is such that they don't want to have this abortion that they've created interfered with. They're just going to keep on feeding it, and they're going to keep on living off the profits that they can produce. And incidentally, you know, I understand capitalism, and I know that profit is a motivating force behind it, but the interesting thing is, the jealous stop to notice, they don't do anything good with the profits. Some of it, of course, is fed back to sustain the same business in terms of exploration for additional oil wells and other things of that sort. And I'm sure some of it goes into the weapons business and the military aspects, because let's face it, the oil people are also warmongers. But where is the benefit to mankind? You know, why aren't these people cherishing the resource that they're tapping and realize that it's another of the gifts from the Creator? And therefore, if they are living high on the hog off of this, they should toss a bone to the peons every once in a while, but they don't do that. As a matter of fact, they milk the peons to the point where sooner or later they won't be able to squeeze any more blood out of them. And that's an insanity in itself, you know, because they're going to be destroying the very herd that they are trying to capitalize upon. Very mysterious behavior.
Yeah. Well, I'm sort of asking the rhetorical question, you know, for the listening audience. I think we both have our opinions as to why this is being done. You look to find some sanity in this. You know, you think, okay, if these are the experts and they know this so well, then why do they invest so much into a dying business? Well, the answer is that it's not really dying. Yet they want to penalize us for using the very system. You know, in other words, they produce the oil, they produce all the byproducts that are used, whether they're solvents or they're fuels or the byproducts that manufacture goods that hold more of the same stuff. And then we move from one place to another over the pathways that they create out of the bulk product that's left over, that's unusable as a fuel. Take asphalt, for example. They make roads, and something simple as a flash flood, like occurred last night in northwestern Arkansas, 8 inches of rain turned into a 20-foot rise in the local streams and rivers and drowned. Now they're saying maybe a couple hundred people who were camping overnight. The risks that are taken to make profits and the amount of suffering that the people go through is certainly not commensurate. Are these people going to be able to sue anybody because of the weather manipulation that's going on and all these aberrant conditions that are created by all of these rogue technologies that are being misused to modify the environment and the atmosphere and the ionosphere and Lord knows what else. It's just a never-ending spiral of insanity that has to collapse upon itself. And I guess the purpose for this whole discussion is to entertain the possibilities of us removing ourselves from a dependency on that. We allow ourselves to become dependent on it. I suppose if they start selling us drugs instead of food, we'll all become dependent on those drugs. And eventually we'll die from that because we're not going to be nourishing our bodies. And
well,
certainly,
I've already done that. I mean, if you look at what's in the food you're eating, especially the processed stuff, I mean, there's words on there that you can't even pronounce. They certainly didn't grow in a natural environment. They're not a product of nature, but the long-term effects they have on human beings, that's fine because it feeds the cancer industry, it feeds the Alzheimer's industry, it feeds what the heck is that disease where your blood sugar goes bananas?
Diabetes.
It feeds the diabetes industry. I mean, they have it rigged, so they make money no matter what happens. And they don't have any concern about the human misery factor, none whatsoever. But I want to inject an interesting thought. And actually, Don, you were responsible for priming the pump on this one when you made the comment about the exceedingly high pressures associated with this escaping oil in the Gulf, and the fact that there are fissures and some kind of abnormalities associated with the Europe's crust in that region. I was thinking about, I was meditating on that exact thing not too long ago, and the history of a normal oil well is such that if it's a fair-sized reserve of petroleum, naturally it's pumped out at a rate that is commensurate with the sale of the product, but it certainly doesn't escape at the rate and velocity that it's doing right now. So if it's removed at a slower pace, when the pressures and everything begin to equalize over time, the water from the subterranean stratas that are surrounding the pocket of oil slowly seep into that and fill that void from the bottom up, because the petroleum products literally will float on the brine or the water that's in there. And since this is done very slowly over a period of years, you maintain a hydrostatic equilibrium. Now, it occurred to me that the rate that oil is escaping from there, if that reservoir is of a considerable size underground, it's not going to necessarily have a chance to reach any kind of an equilibrium with water seeping in on the surrounding rock strata, as it usually does. And it could very well be that you wind up with a situation where you have this huge cavity, and there's a complete disequilibrium, which could result in some type of total catastrophe that we don't know about yet. You know, like supposing the whole ceiling of that thing collapsed. Supposing that once that void was emptied, that other forces that we don't know about take over simply because of the rate at which that thing is drained. Any number of things could happen. If the sea, for instance, was to flow into that hole and cause a change in the lubrication layer that exists between the Earth's crust and the mantle, it's not impossible that the entire surface of the planet could shift its location, as we talked about on a number of shows in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had a lot of, I don't like to use the word visions, but let's say input from another source that suggests that that we're going to have some kind of a calamity, which is going to result in a shifting of the Earth's confidence with respect to their present positions. And all these kind of things happen because of our arrogance. You know, we're tampering with things we don't know anything about, or we know very little about, but in our arrogance, we always assume that we're in complete control. And these elite who are running everything these days forget that there's only one being that's in control. And this planet will be here whether we're here or not. And it will repair itself eventually. But we are hastening towards some type of terrible ending. And if we don't start to wake up and do something about it, I wouldn't be surprised what happens. I really wouldn't.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you on that wholeheartedly. In terms of what's out there, you know, you mentioned this particular engine. I heard an interview just a few days ago where there was some talk about this engine that burns different types of fuels, and people were getting something in the neighborhood of 250 miles to the gallon, we'll say. And we're not talking about petroleum fuels here. We're talking about water, various types of cooking oils, pretty much anything you could get into that engine was producing those kinds of results. Obviously, that's a threat to the petroleum industry, but you would think that they would see the advantage of having something like that if what they were telling us was true, you see. And I'm not saying at all, Jim, that they have to be the ones to control this. Quite the opposite. I think it's time for us to take control of our own lives and make our own decisions. Now, that certainly goes against the grain of this New World Order system where everybody is a slave. You know, there are just so many contradictions, and people are so much in fear about what's happening because they've bought all of these lies about this insufficient quantities, you know, these illusions that there's not enough to go around. And therefore, you've got to try to get it while you can. And if you can't get it, somebody else is going to get it. And then everyone else is going to do without. That whole system operates on fear. And it certainly indicates that those that created it operate on fear themselves. They're very fearful of losing control. And so all the efforts to impede progress, which is in the face of what they promote, an outright lie. It's 180 degrees the opposite of what they profess to be promoting. You know, you go to college, you're going to get a good job. Why? So you can pay off these exorbitant college loans? To me, that's sort of that's insanity. But somebody profits from that. Somebody benefits from that. And we know how. We've talked about that many times. But it seems to be a bogus scientific system set up to support a corrupt and very controlled reality, if you want to use that term. Although it's a very limited reality, and it's
you hit the nail on the head. It's a limited reality. It's also a limited science.
I mean,
there's an entire spectrum that goes in an infinite direction to the left and the right of where we are forced to stand. And when it comes to an understanding of the true nature of things, I mean, we're nowhere. We're really only a very, very short distance from where our Neanderthal brothers were standing with respect to what could be accomplished, let's face it. And we're forced to stay here because that's where they want us to be. But the reality of the situation is that there's no limit to the knowledge that could be available if the resources, both financial, human, and otherwise, were all put to use for that purpose. I mean, all you have to do is look at a starry sky at night, or consider the complexities of the simplest living organism. You know, or even just look at your own hand. I'd like to see some factory owned by the elite produce a hand. You know, it just doesn't happen. The knowledge that it takes and the intelligence that it takes to create an entire universe is literally at our disposal. Now, we will never become God, but we're allowed to become as much of Him as we can become. And why the heck aren't we doing that? You know, the people have to want it. You know, that's the key. The people have to want it. They have to be seduced by the incredible complexity and beauty of the universe instead of a bowl of pretzels, a mug of beer, and a baseball game. If they don't switch to a different mode of motivation, then they'll always be slaves. Because even if you get rid of the present creeps that are controlling the earth, the fact of the matter is, history has proven that another regiment will rise up and take their place. That has happened over and over and over again. So where is the real problem? The real problem is that human beings have to hold themselves in higher regard. They have to want something better than they have now. If they don't, and they decide to let the so-called government or the powers to be control their lives because it's more convenient to do so, then you can't complain. You have to accept what you're given. So it's one or the other, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, and to maybe take that a step further, what we're witnessing today, just with these disasters that are going on all over the world, and they're not limited to the oil industry by any means, it's as if we can't see the writing on the wall. The oil company creates all the problems, and we get all the blame for it. Or we bear the expense of fixing the problem without them being accountable for what they do. Certainly, all of us would be held accountable had we caused this. And in a sense, the only way we can be accountable to them is for them to come up with more ways to extract wealth from us. Money or assets and anything that can be liquidated. that they can turn into gold, for instance. They don't really care about their oil other than the gold that they can garner from peddling it. They don't care about describing the pollution or the cause of the pollution when they, in the very process of bringing the oil out of the ground, are initiating the problem. Somehow we fail to see that. And we fail to have the courage or the foresight or the insight to see that they are the problem. Totally, they're the problem. And we're forced to live with it. We're forced to accept it. Well, there's nothing you can do about it. I hear people say all the time, what are you going to do about it? You can't change it. Yeah, we were promised change, weren't we? Boy, are we getting it, too.
Yeah, I'll say.
And I sounded the alarm on that. I knew what kind of change was coming, and we got exactly what I said we were going to get.
And of course, we're only getting warmed up, too, I might add.
Yeah. And it's the evil. Now, these are the warmongers. So you can expect war because that's how they get more oil. They invade countries, and they steal it. Of course, they'll contrive any excuse that they feel is going to pass muster, and they have a corrupt media to propagandize that message, to assist them in the lying of it through images and sounds. You know, it's just this never-ending vicious cycle, Jim. It's like being in a tape loop, and we're in it, or we are the tape loop.
Well, it's interesting you should bring up that that remark you just made about, you know, starting wars to get oil and that type of thing. Many, many years ago, and I don't know the exact number, but I would say somewhere in the mid to late 60s, there was a movie with Robert Redford in it called 7 Days of the Condor.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a really interesting movie because they were trying to wipe this guy out. He worked in the CIA, but all he did was read books. And the purpose of his job was to identify interesting scenarios that were dreamt up by other people who wrote these books for entertainment purposes. And then, you know, pass those ideas along to someone in the inner sanctum who was probably actually plotting various things in the world. And one of the things that he exposed, which almost cost him his life, was the fact that the CIA was actually planning an invasion of some oil country. I forget which one it was supposed to be. And their excuse was that, well, we're going to take it because the people want it. And the people are not going to care where we get it, you know. And they just want to be able to have their homes warm in the winter and drive their cars and continue with the lifestyle that that they're used to. But the unspoken aspect of that entire message is the fact that that so-called lifestyle that they are used to is the illusion that has been arranged for us. And it's a human trait to try and stick to what you're used to. So, you know, it's another way of exposing the fact that all of this is contrived. And it even leaks out in movies, for goodness sakes.
Yeah. And well, we have false flag events that basically portray the same things, too. We had a movie several months before 9/11 shown on Fox TV called The Lone Gunman. And that was about flying planes into the World Trade Center. They showed us what they were going to do, you see. Now, was it Osama bin Laden that paid for the production of that movie? Does he run Hollywood? You know what I'm saying? I mean, look at it from that perspective. Who runs Hollywood? you know who was behind 9/11.
Yep.
Pretty simple. And, of course, there are a lot of tentacles that reach out from that because there was a lot of money made from that event. And just like there's going to be a lot of money made now. Right now, they're just paying off people to keep them out of the way, you see. There have been solutions proposed for this oil catastrophe that they keep calling a spill, despite the fact that the definition doesn't fit. It's not a spill. Nothing got spilled. It's spewing out of a hole a mile down at the floor of the ocean from many miles below. They even lied about how deep the well was. They lied about the pressure. They lied about what caused it. We've got it on videotape, taken by some fishermen that were in the vicinity when the lights went out first, and then there were explosions. And you can see beams from space coming down right on top of that platform. Through the full extent of the video, mind you, this is not just a little flash. This is a consistent beam of a high-energy weapon. So this is a sabotage to precipitate this event, and they're in no hurry to clean it up because there's a predicted outcome of how this is going to go.
Oh, I agree with you. I mean, the benzene alone is going to fuel the cancer centers and the lung, the pulmonary clinics, and the poison clinics, and God only knows what else, for years to come. And, you know, the secondary and tertiary effects of this are not even fathomable. Nobody knows what's going to happen. But I'm sure, because I understand their colors, that these people will capitalize on every misery that this event causes. And they'll do it without absolutely no tinge of conscience whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jim, there was some interesting information that came out with my interview with Lindsay Williams back in May. I actually had two of them. And Lindsay actually emphatically stated that back in 2004, and I did some research on this, and this is very accurate, the Russians had drilled a well down to the depth of 40,230 feet. They did it on land. And I later learned that there were several other wells, in fact, as many as six other wells, that experienced a similar problem because of this obscene amount of pressure. I say obscene. It's unimaginable if it's in the neighborhood of anywhere from 75,000 to 100,000 pounds per square inch. And the only way they could contain the massive flow of oil that they had extracted at that depth was to use nuclear devices to seal off the wells. Now, if they do that in the Gulf of Mexico, not to mention what's going to happen to the marine life, any that exists, but you now you're making this a radioactive situation, and they've got fissures that seem to, on independent analysis, this information is not coming from BP. These are the scientists that are observing all the signposts of what's going on there, the different ways they have to monitor this. And allegedly NOAA is looking for these fissures. I've been reporting this for almost 2 weeks, that there's another worse disaster 5 to 6 miles from that location where there's a fissure in the ground and oil is spewing out there too. They're not telling the general public about this. What do you think would happen were they to try to seal this off using nuclear bombs, we'll say, or nuclear devices?
Well, you know, that calls for a lot of speculation, but let's look at it intelligently. You know, generally speaking, when they drill a shallow well, the pressure is usually caused by a gas pocket, which forms above the oil reserve, and when they put the casing down into the level of the oil, you know, the gas simply pushes down on the oil, and the oil rises up the pipe. You know, that's a simple thing to understand. It's like drinking a drink with a soda straw.
Yeah.
But when they have these excessively deep wells, okay, and you've got pressures, you know, in the neighborhood of 100,000 pounds per square inch, that doesn't sound to me like the kind of pressure that can be exerted by a pocket of gas. It sounds more like it's caused by the bearing weight of all of the rock strata and other material that is situated above the oil reserve. And, you know, that's exactly what I was getting at before when I said that depending on how this is handled, we could be looking at an enormous catastrophe, much larger than what might be considered. How many people in the past 20-some-odd years, and I can't remember the name of the guy, but there was one individual in particular who prophesied that the United States is going to split in half physically.
Edgar Cayce said that. He was one.
And there was another guy very recently, I can't think of his name, I would say within the last 20 years. And the line of demarcation was given as the Mississippi Valley. Now, we know that there's a flaw that runs up through there because once in a while there's earthquakes on that fault. And if that should have run right down into the fissure area that you're talking about down there in the Gulf, then maybe a nuclear device would be all it takes to just cause something unimaginable to occur. The thing of it is, I hate to say this, but I really believe that Americans are dumbed down so badly that it's going to take some horrible thing like that before they really realize that they can't trust big industry, they can't trust government, they can't trust anybody. But millions are going to have to die first. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And it's stacking up to the point where that's what's going to happen. I'm not saying that there's going to be a split of the country. That's possible, I suppose. But even if that never happens, if that oil just keeps coming out of the ground at its present rate, how long do you think it's going to take before we start reaping the negative benefits of that problem? How long do you think it's going to be before all that garbage gets into the drinking water, for instance? You know, what happens when it starts raining benzene on our wheat fields and our corn fields? It's already raining benzene in Florida.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've read those reports. Now, do you think that to some extent this crust that's been fractured is actually fracturing because it's collapsing, let's say, as its weight bears down on the void that's left by the oil that's spewing out from underneath?
Well, that was my concern right there, because, see, normally the process is very slow, and as the pressure is relieved by removing the oil, it's replaced by, you know, water seeping in from the surrounding rock strata. There's no way that water is going to seep in there at the same rate that that oil is coming out right now. What happens if you have an enormous piece of the Earth's crust collapse down in to a place where it doesn't belong? I don't know what's going to happen, but I can tell you one thing: it won't be a nice experience.
You're going to have earthquakes and tsunamis, and Lord knows what else. I that's probably why we have so many quakes, other than, you know, all of the technology that's being tested out, you know, for various purposes, HARP and what have you. I mean, Tesla with that little handheld device could wreak havoc in New York 100 years ago. So,
yeah,
who knows?
Multiply that by about 20 billion times, and you might get some idea of what could happen, you know?
Yeah.
I'll throw this into the mix, too, Don. You know, I've had some pretty prophetic experiences over the years. Most of them had to do with technology, things that I was trying to develop, and I guess nature kicks in every once in a while and gives you a little helping hand. Comes in the form of dreams or just a general awakening or a shift in consciousness where you get some kind of an input. But we haven't talked about this very much on any of our shows, but one of my greatest interests has always been archaeology. And I was always hoping that I'd make enough money during my lifetime that when I retired, I'd like to go and look, you know, do a little archaeological prospecting of my own. Well, I had I don't like the word vision because it's got religious connotations associated with it, but I had a happening, if you want to call it that, in which I saw myself in a future time exploring parts of South America, and the jungle was gone, and all of the vegetation was dying because there was enormous temperature change. Instead of being in a tropical environment, it was either in, you know, one of the temperate zones or someplace much colder than it should have been. And I thought it was a very interesting dream, or whatever you want to call it, because I couldn't figure out what it had to do with. But, you know, we have now entered times where things like this start to look feasible. I mean, there's nothing to stop the entire skin of the earth from shifting if we do something stupid that causes the creation of the necessary forces. People look at this planet and think that just because it's so big, nothing can happen to it. But that's really far from true. And we don't know what's going to happen if those fissures open up and cause, you know, some new realignment of the tectonic plates, for instance, or of the Earth's crust as we now know it. I mean, there's a crack that literally runs around the entire planet. I forget what it's called, but I think they
Washington. It's called Washington, D.C.
Pardon me?
It's called Washington, D.C.
Well, that's certainly the source of it. But in the Atlantic Ocean, there's a thing called the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, which is actually the remains of a huge fissure, which can be traced almost completely around the planet. So it's not impossible for the Earth to undergo some really severe changes and still survive. Mm-hmm. Whether we will survive or not is a separate issue.
Would that have had anything to do with Atlantis, do you think? The demise of Atlantis, possibly?
Well, it certainly could have. I mean, the information that survives certainly suggests that the calamity was enormous. I mean, Plato's writings, for instance, say that the seas were not navigable for years after Atlantis disappeared. So whatever happened to it and wherever it went, it didn't go quietly. And by the way, there is in the Pupul Vuh, which is a South American document of great age, there is a mention of the fact that there was a time when there was no moon in the sky, and when the sun rose in the west and not in the east. Now, we all know that the sun didn't do any changing, so something certainly changed on the earth, if any of that is to be believed. And it's interesting that humanity survived, but of course we all know that the number of souls who made it through the last era of catastrophe were few in number. And as I've said on other shows, you know, don't be surprised if old Mother Earth decides to give herself a real enema and do away with the majority of all of us. That's so hard to consider.
Yeah, and you know, you did refer to the Earth as being rather large in size, but on a galactic scale, it's rather puny. And
well,
and
sure.
I think if you take into account consciousness, it's even smaller. You could probably fit it into a pea.
Yeah, it's a shame, but it's true.
Well. Well, there's so much to talk about yet, Jim, but we're out of time. I want to thank you for tackling these subjects, you know, sort of on the fly. We didn't really plan anything. I would like to explore on some future shows some alternative modalities of power production, to use the term that you're comfortable with and makes all the sense in the world. There's energy everywhere, and harnessing it and converting it into power is what we're after. And it, we could do our part to enlighten people to that fact and get people to start speaking the correct language. I think that would probably steer us in the proper course. What's your thought
on
that?
It's interesting you mention that, because one thing that is kind of a pet peeve of mine in my research, I'm a stickler for understanding what's known as dimensionality. And that is, you know, if you talk about a kilowatt, for instance, you better know what that kilowatt consists of in terms of the mathematics that makes it a kilowatt.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I bring this up is because people have a tendency to use all these different terms interchangeably. I've heard people talk about work and force and power and all these other, and velocity, that's another one, as if they're all the same thing. And if they really understood what they were saying, you know, they realize that they're just blowing smoke when they talk like that. If they don't understand the concepts, there's no way they can ever hope to find something new and worthwhile. It might be interesting to just do one show on the definition and breakdown of just four or five of the most fundamental concepts in physics, you know, and then build from there. Maybe we could turn this into a teaching situation, you know.
Well, of course, I'd be open to that, and I'm sure the listening audience was too. I get the general impression that we are where we are, and people's hope for change gets quashed, if you want to use that term, or sort of like putting out a fire, you know, drenched in despondency because we're fed these lies, or they invent these terms that get us spinning our wheels because none of it's based in truth or fundamentals that are actually real or applicable in any given way. They have, you know, it's sort of like the search for the Holy Grail, you know, of science. They make up a term and everybody starts, you know, this term sustainability. Well, the universe goes on through eternity, so it's got sustainability built into it. But we're not operating on upon those principles. So to say that you're looking for a sustainable environment, the universe is quite capable of sustaining itself without our interference. What we do is we impede that sustainability. So I think we have to begin to recognize what we're doing, which is against the grain of what's natural, because it's destructive. And it fits in, you know, with the model that we've been pushing and delving into somewhat, the aspect of a producer and a non-producer. This world is run by producers. I say run because we are really the ones that are creating things, and the non-producers are parasitizing it and destroying it. Those that produce are creative, and those that are non-producers are destructive. All we have to do is look at what's happening and who's behind it, and we can identify those that are destroying the planet. It's quite simple, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, if you've got your eyes open.
Well,
these guys go out of their way to disguise what they do. I mean, you know, slavery is being practiced right now in the United States, and it's called welfare. You know, if you knew, if people really understood the mechanism, the way it's out in the open, you know, if it were totally out in the open, they'd resent it terribly. But the way it's done, of course, is money is taken from you, it's gone, it's put into the government, it's cranked around through a series of nonsensical procedures, and then it's essentially sent to people who don't do anything except receive checks. But if you were forced, if a law was written that said, okay, you're earning $92,000 a year, every paycheck you get, you give 35% of it to this family down the block, I bet you that there'd be outrage. But you see, they don't do it in the open. It's all done behind the scenes. And that's how they do everything.
Yeah.
There isn't a person I know, I don't care what their religious or political affiliation is, that would feel good about taking, you know, 50 to 30% of their income to sustain some family that just sat on their behinds, ate potato chips and watched television all day long.
I've been playing
a
clip.
But that's what's happening, though.
Yeah, I've been playing a clip all week, and I don't know if you've heard it, but maybe I should play it for you. It's a short clip. It's like 2.5 minutes, and it's definitely it lays it out there for you what's going on, the ignorance that's out there. This is a woman, and I'm going to play this for you, Jim. This is a woman that's in Florida who called into the Michael Savage show. We've called Michael Savage Sean Hannity, and we've called him Glenn Beck, but this is Michael Savage responding to a caller on his syndicated radio show.
Let's go to Boca Raton, Florida. She's on the other side. Joe, in Boca Raton, welcome. You say the Arizona law is wrong. Is that correct?
Yes, I think it's absolutely racist that they're telling the illegal aliens that they can't come into Arizona. They can do what they want to. I mean, we're America. We have to have open...
Oh, wait. You're saying too many things at once. They're saying what?
That we need to have...
You're saying... Wait, ma'am. Are you aware of the fact that a country has borders? Are you aware of that?
I'm saying that we need to get rid of our borders so we can welcome all forms and walks of life.
Of course, you're pulling my leg.
I'm serious. Just look at how your ancestors got here.
Well, they didn't come here illegally. Maybe yours did. How did yours get here? Did they come here illegally?
I don't know, but they got over here somehow. And now,
well, apparently they pulled from the lowest level of the gene pool from where you came from, that you don't even know how a nation is defined. How many people do you think this country could sustain with open borders? Is there a limit? An upper limit in your mind?
I think we could sustain so many people because there's capitalism.
I said how many? How many people are in America today? How many millions?
600 million.
Oh, my God. Oh, boy, we're in trouble, aren't we? So you just guessed at that, I could see, because that's not the correct number. Okay, we'll give you another chance. How many people do you think the United States of America could sustain if we had no borders and anybody could just enter the country? How many people?
We need to put limits on people's income because people are making way too much money and they need to...
So in other words, it's not the number of people here, it's the amount of money people are making.
Yes, it's the greed in America. We need to spread
it
out.
I see. How much money do you make a year, Joe?
Nothing. Right now I'm on a welfare check, but that doesn't matter anymore.
Ah, you're on a welfare check. That's why you're so benevolent with other people's money. So you're telling men like me who work for a living, who pay your welfare check, that I should be limited in how much I make so you can make more money doing nothing?
Well, I think that you don't pay my welfare check. I think Obama pays my welfare check.
Wait, what do you mean? Obama pays it out of his pocket? Where does Obama get the money from, Joe?
I don't know his stash. I don't know where he gets it. But the main thing is...
What do you mean you don't know where he gets it from? It's called the public treasury. Where does the money come from into the public treasury, Joe?
Illegal aliens who work for a living and then they pass the money to the government.
Joe, you're a very sick person. I really pity you, Joe. And you never should have been able to get on the show because a man wants to find hell as a place where there is no reason. And you just dragged me into hell, Joe.
There's a supporter of the person who's handling this crisis in the Gulf. Any thoughts,
Joe? Well, I tell you, it's a horrible thing, but I'm sure there are millions like that. And that's the root of the problem right there.
Yes. And you just happened to open up that door, so I had to play that clip. You can see.
I'm glad you did it for the sake of overall education, but it only confirms what I already believe, and it's kind of sad.
Yeah. It is, and this, you know, I recall years ago that they were taking people off the welfare rolls, that people were going to be required to work, and here you have a person just dictating what our national policies should be, and there's a non-producer again, right? That's a non-producer talking to a producer, and we're at that state where the non-producers have the voice. They have the power. They have the control. And we've allowed that to occur because we've just basically ignored. She did refer, and one of our listeners is pointing this out, and I did want to comment. She says, I suppose he has it in his stash.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I suppose we should ask Larry Sinclair about that stash, too. Oh,
yeah,
man.
It's really amazing. Well, you know, it's the old story that the way the planet was designed to work doesn't seem to be good enough for some people. Now, you know, it's essentially the law of the jungle. You have to do something or you perish, period. No, but now all these bleeding hearts come along and say, oh, well, you know, this person or that person, they need public assistance. They shouldn't have to be put through the rigmarole of a job or this or that. And there are cases when that's true. But when you have families that have been on welfare for four and five generations, I somehow think that's pushing it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the real question is, and I don't know who considers it, but they should be, what happens when all of us go on welfare? Does anybody even want to venture a guess?
Well, I don't think that'll ever happen because you have to have producers to produce the welfare. I mean, it's all just going to be this big illusion.
That was my whole point.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Well, we know from this caller to the Michael Savage show that Obama has a stash. Now, we're still trying to find out where the certificate of live birth is and the legitimate Social Security number, among other things. But we know he's got a stash, so maybe he's got that in his stash.
Just what I was going to say. You know, if you find the stash, you'll find all that stuff.
All right, Jim, well, we're out of time. I want to thank you for a great show tonight, and I look forward to our next discussion. I'll try to pay closer attention to what's going on in the Gulf, and I'm sure you will. I'll keep you apprised of what I hear, and if you hear anything from the scientific perspective, please don't hesitate to share it with me.
Well, I haven't in the past. I don't see why I should do so in the future. I'll be happy to tell you.
All right. You have a great weekend, and I'm going to say goodnight to the listeners now. Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and tonight's special guest, Jim Murray. If, by any chance, you have an invention or some device that needs some help, professional help, and the expertise of a man like Jim Murray, then I encourage you to go to my website, DirectLightProductions.com, and click on Sponsors. On that page, you're going to find some information about some help that's available to you through Accurate Machine and Tool Company. And Jim and his good friend George are there to consult with you. They can manufacture tool and die. Also, they can basically create anything that you need as long as it falls in the line of work that they do in machining and tool manufacturing. They can help you with prototypes. They can consult with you and advise you on how to get your project launched. And all that information is on my sponsors page. Just go to directlightproductions.com. Click on Sponsors, Accurate Machine and Tool Company. I'd like to thank the folks at Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting this show, as well as blogtalkradio.com. Also, Seth Hendrick on the sound, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me next week on Monday night when my special guest will be Dr. A. Truott. In the meantime, wish you a great weekend and a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.